Hey everyone, this is Mike Wolf. It's just about 5 or 6 weeks until the Smart Kitchen Summit on October 5th and 6th. In case you don't know, we've added Smart Kitchen Summit pre-conference workshops. Those are extra, just a little bit extra. So if you want to come and hear the people who run kitchen for Williams-Sonoma or Amazon, you want to hear famous kitchen designer Johnny Gray, if you want to hear from venture capitalists about how to raise money for your Smart Kitchen startup, you might want to consider coming to these pre-conference workshops. Either way, make sure you come to the night of October 5th to the Startup Showcase at the Edgewater, right by the conference center. We're going to have 15 amazing smart kitchen startups for you to check out. We're actually making the decisions today. Some amazing startups. Make sure you come and check some of those out. If you do want to buy your ticket, just go to smartkitchensummit.com. Use the discount code podcast to get 10% off tickets. All right, everyone, let's talk to Ashley. Welcome to the Smart Kitchen Show. My name is Mike Wolf. The Smart Kitchen Show is a podcast about the kitchen, technology, and food, and the story of a conference that brings all those things together. I'm your host, Michael Wolf, and I put this podcast together because in the process of creating the Smart Kitchen Summit, I've been meeting lots of great folks that I thought you should hear from too. If you'd like to listen to more Smart Kitchen shows, you can find them in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also go to smartkitchensummit.com/show. The Smart Kitchen Summit will be back in 2016 on October 5th and 6th in Seattle. If you'd like to go, just go to smartkitchensummit.com for more information. And now, on to the show.
So, Mike, how was Chicago this week?
Good. I actually got around the city a little bit. I hopped on a water taxi. I never actually went on that little river that goes to the... I should know the name of the river.
Oh, now you're going to put me on the spot. I don't know the name of the river either. But, well, why were you in Chicago in the first place? Not to go on a water taxi.
No, I actually went and spoke to KitchenAid. They had a big meeting there. A lot of the people who help run KitchenAid invited me to come speak to their folks at their, I think, either their annual meeting or their half-yearly meeting.
Oh, that's very good. And you spoke there, and what did you talk about? Just the smart kitchen as the industry?
Yeah, the future of kitchen, how, you know, what's happening here. So that was kind of flattering. They asked me to come and speak to them. So
yeah, very cool. Well, speaking of KitchenAid, big, you know, appliance manufacturers, there was some kind of big news, you know, I think right before you left for the trip where one of our sponsors and major manufacturers got bought by Samsung.
Yeah, Samsung bought Decor. I talked about this on the Smart Home Show podcast. We haven't talked about it on this one. This is a really interesting move because I think it shows that Samsung's committed to the kitchen, but it also, like, it made a lot of sense just because there's literally almost no overlap between the Samsung appliance brand and Decor from a channel perspective. Like, Decor is like totally high end, very much in the installer and professional channels, whereas Samsung's that middle market, still, I mean, a great brand and like a fast growing brand, but definitely not one that's like one you would see in the premium channel.
Yeah, I think it's smart that they seemingly have decided to keep the Decor brand intact as opposed to absorbing it because, you know, I think it's the high-end market is really unique. Folks don't really like to – like if you're a high-end buyer, you're not probably buying a Samsung or, you know, a Whirlpool or anything like that. Like you're looking for the high-end brand. So – it's clear that they want, they bought it for, you know, it's established market in that space. And also Decor has been an early leader in smart kitchen. And I think it's really smart to sort of, for them to look at the technologies that Decor has been developing and potentially look at how they could trickle down into Samsung's offerings.
If you are in that premium channel, you go like to buy, if you're like, you're doing a high-end home, you're looking at Sub-Zero, you know, you're looking at Wolf, you're looking at Decor. And those are the brands that these salespeople are going to try and sell you. They're not going to try and sell you a Samsung. And that's nothing against Samsung. It's just, it's one of those brands, much like Whirlpool, that isn't like you said, isn't in that premium channel. So
also, speaking of, this is where my you know, transitions are going to fall apart, by the way, because like I'm looking at what we're going to talk about next and it has nothing to do with Samsung Ring 4. So let's just talk about an interesting story that we saw this week. So I think I said this to you because I was like, this is so cool. We need to get him on the show. So Elon Musk's brother, whose name is Kimball Musk, has launched this effort to he's going to have a food tech startup incubator, and he's getting involved with the vertical farm movement. Did you see that story?
First thought immediately is it must be tough to be a Elon Musk brother. And then also like Kimball Musk is an interesting name. Do they have any other like siblings? I want to know what the other siblings' names are. Yeah. No, but this is interesting. I don't know the grand vision around his incubator, but I think it is interesting that one of the Musks is going into food tech.
Yeah, there's definitely been a huge uptick across the country in food tech incubators and accelerators. That's definitely a growing trend. So it's not surprising, you know, that there's a, sort of a big name behind it. But what is interesting is they're focusing on sort of the agricultural tech that's been emerging. And there's kind of a new wave of folks, you know, millennial generation, who are getting into farming, but in new ways, right? Like urban-focused farming or using new technologies, which I think is kind of cool and also really addresses some of the, you know, real food shortage issues and water shortage issues and things like that that are facing not only this country, but across the globe. So I think when you see the last name Musk and, you know, it's just something to watch and something to and we're going to get them on the show. Kimball and Elon, if you're listening to this, which you do, you need to come on the show. We want to interview you.
That the home grow and kind of the vertical farming, where IoT and connected technology meets growing, like that's just been a really active space. There's a lot of startups, even in the kitchen side. Like there's a lot of folks doing these basically in-home vertical grow systems where you can kind of monitor it with your smartphone. I certainly know, having followed Internet of Things a lot over the past couple of years, farming has been one of the industries that has truly embraced the, you know, smart home, or not smart home, but IoT. Because, you know, once you start talking about using sensors to monitor the soil moisture, the pH balance, et cetera, that's stuff that technology can do really well. And you weren't able to really do without scaling, you know, a large workforce before, but now you can do it with technology.
Yeah. And the form factor of, you know, using different techniques to farm and not needing the type of acreage. And I mean, my father-in-law is actually a dairy farmer, so I have like a weird, unique, like knowledge set on this in the space. But, you know, he owns like 200 acres in upstate New York. And the labor and the work that's involved with farming at that level it's really intense and it's very hard to get into. And this sort of advancement is actually, I think, welcoming new folks to the space, which is why I think you see a lot of investment and interest there.
Well, there's huge investment or huge embrace of drones by farmers. I don't know if it's as much on the dairy farmer side, but just using drones to kind of monitor the crops. I just know that there's a lot of even kind of startups focused on that space. Is it your uncle? Does he use drones?
No, he's my father-in-law.
Your father-in-law. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. And I mean, someday I'm going to like send you a picture of him. He is like the nicest man ever, but the first time he met me, he was like, tell her to slow down. I can't understand what she's saying because I talk really fast.
So drones are probably not in
his space at all. Like if I asked him if he was using drones, he'd be like, what the hell's a drone? That's where we are with that.
Did you know that Perfect Company, the company that actually, they had Mike Wallace, not the famous Mike Wallace from 60 Minutes, but Mike Wallace from Smart Kitchen Company, they actually did a deal with Sur La Table. And they created a customized, I guess, Perfect Kitchen Pro is what they're calling it, where they took all their different scales and put them into one.
Yep. Yeah, I saw this. I was so excited. So they were at the summit last year, and they had their different scales for and different apps for baking, blending cocktails, and like shakes and things like that. And so now you have this one scale that with the accompanying apps that can sort of do it all. So like if you're someone who struggles with baking and you want to, you know, get the ingredients exactly right, or you're someone who wants a precise cocktail or something, like basically you'll sit there with your container on the scale and pour, and then the app will ding at you and tell you like, stop pouring, it's the exact amount. So it's kind of like recipe without thought, right? Like you don't have to actually read anything while you're preparing, and it will also be really, really precise.
I know that Cyril, I mean, this is one of the announcements that came out of Cyril Taub. I know that Cyril Taub has some other things that are coming out around Connected Kitchen. That's kind of an interesting side story, I think, just their investment in this category and more technology. Because, I just know that they're coming out with some more stuff. It seems certainly that retailers are embracing kitchen technology more.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, we've seen folks like Williams-Sonoma actively involved in the space. And I think also it's a great place to unveil something that's, you know, pretty unique and might at first appeal to a more like a discerning, maybe a little bit higher end buyer, and then eventually, you know, head down to the Targets of the world. Because, you know, if you're in that store, a lot of times you're shopping for a gift, or you're shopping for, you know, something, a unique item. Maybe you're doing a wedding registry or something. And it's kind of a cool way to introduce people to what might not be a necessity at first, but something that is an interesting take on, you know, an old, you know, cooking technique in the kitchen, baking or blending or things like that.
Speaking of retailers, there's a retailer that a lot of other retailers don't like. It goes by the name of Amazon. They don't act like other retailers. In fact, they do things like launch TV shows in Japan. Did you see the story? Amazon is actually launching a cooking show in Japan, and then it's only for Prime subscribers, and then you can buy the meals that the Japanese chef makes through Amazon.
Yeah, this is maybe the funniest thing. Like, you sent this to me, and I was like, wait, what?
They're yeah, right?
A cooking show?
Right? It's a weird story, but it's so Amazon. Only Amazon would do this, something like this.
Only Amazon. I have so many more questions than I have comments. One, why Japan? Like, what is that? Is there, like, a certain market there that they feel like customers will be – they're really excited about ordering food?
I just envision – maybe it's like me going to, like, one of these hibachi restaurants. I just envision this flamboyant Japanese chef, like – you know, I think it'd be great viewing.
No, it's a really interesting idea. And also, we have talked about, and I know you've talked about on the Smart Home Show before, like marrying, you know, connected home devices and things like that with like services. And this is kind of that a little bit. Like, it's, you know, it's viewing with, you know, service-based stuff. It's a really interesting concept. Like, I can imagine watching like the you know, cooking shows or whatever on like Cooking Network or the Food Network and being like, oh, that looks really good. Let me order that. I mean, I don't know how the mechanics of how that would work. Like, what do they send you the ingredients? Does a chef show up at your house and cook it for you? Is it that exact chef that's on the show?
As I'm thinking about this, you know, we've talked a lot about food delivery services, kind of marrying with the kitchen. And there's been a whole lot of investment in food delivery startups. And certainly Amazon has kind of toyed with this. I mean, I think we maybe talked on the show before about their, I think they're watching, I think GeekWire's done some good reporting on this, like lunchtime food delivery services. And I often hear about them because they pilot them in Seattle. But I think if they married Amazon Video, Prime Video, with some sort of food concept, like that's an interesting marriage of some of their assets that I haven't really thought about before. Because usually you're thinking, okay, if they're going to get into the smart kitchen, you're going to use Amazon Echo. And then maybe, okay, they obviously know delivery. They're going to maybe do some sort of delivery service. But Amazon Prime Video married with some sort of food delivery, that's an interesting cocktail.
Well, and they have started to get into, and they're a little behind like the Netflix model, but they've started to get into their original, you know, producing original content for Amazon Prime Video. And Netflix has actually done a good job of coming up with like original series based on like different like vertical interests. And one of them is actually a show called Chef's Table. And actually, it was 6 episodes. It was fascinating. If you hadn't watched it, you should totally watch it. And then they sort of do deep dives into all these really unique chefs and their journeys to becoming chefs and things like that, and the restaurants they have. But you can imagine maybe Amazon doing some type of unique cooking show, or, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there, I think, because the creating content is something that I think a lot of these companies are getting more and more involved in. But the mechanics of like ordering, like how, you know, how that would all work, yeah, ordering stuff, I think is really, it'll be fascinating to see how this actually rolls out. And again, like you said, they pilot a lot of stuff in Seattle, and the fact that they're like piloting this in Japan, I'm fascinated by it. Like, why, you know, I mean, GeekWire also covered the fact that they're doing a grocery store, delivery grocery store, a drive-through grocery store, potentially in Seattle, Project X. It's this big thing. So Amazon does lots of like pilot test stuff there. So why is this in Japan? That's what I want to know. That's what I have to ask them.
Great question.
But not speaking of Amazon, but still speaking of like things that are, you know, super fun, you have started making beer recently, right? You got your Pico and you're making beer. I want to hear all about this.
So I got one of the first ones off the line. I actually backed the Pico from Pico Brew on Kickstarter, plunked down $500. It's actually become more than that as I've added accessories. That's a bit, that's a big spend for me on Kickstarter. I usually don't buy, you know, the, like the big purchases. So, but I was so excited about like in-home alcohol production for some reason that I did it. And, it's been probably as easy as advertised. I mean, as, and I'm going to write a review on this, but I would say that, you know, I've been guilty of kind of saying, is this like the Keurig for beer? Just because it's such shorthand for like describing simplifying processes. And then also anytime you have like some sort of component or like a potted, well, I don't know what the term would be, but potatization, componentization, where you take ingredients and put in like a, some sort of pod. They've essentially done that with the grains and the hops, and they created a system for that. So that, that kind of contributed to a little bit to this description that I've used before. But I will say, just having done the process, I don't think we should probably ever use that term, because you just always have this fermentation process. It takes like 4 or 5 days. So,
meaning it doesn't have the ease of
That being said, it's super easy. Like it is like, I've never homebrewed before. I've always been like I've always been homebrew curious, you know, but I've never actually done it before. And partly because I've always been afraid of making a mess. My wife always kind of shut that down pretty quickly. Like, no, you know, but I knew that this would make it easy. So I did it. It's been pretty much as easy as advertised. I will say a couple of just early review thoughts. You still have the smell of like a brewery in your home for like that day of brewing. So like if you have a family member that sees that as a downside, like that's still there. You can't get rid of that smell.
Right.
Also, just a little bit of the processes around cleanup. And after that, I think they need to work on some of the literature. But overall, I mean, they've done a really nice job of making this very easy. I'm excited to kind of give her a full-fledged review. But, I will say that I had brewed the beer, it fermented, and then I force carbonated it, which you do. And that was supposed to take 36 hours. I cut it short of 24 hours and had a beer last night because I couldn't wait any longer. Like, I just wanted to taste my own alcohol, and it's pretty good.
Good.
My beer may be a little bit flat, but
you have to give it that full time. But well, that's really cool. I look forward to reading the whole review. It'd also be interesting if they try to get some reviews from people who are home brewers using the Pico system as kind of a comparison. How does it hold up? You know,
that will be. I mean, I spent a lot of time reviewing the reviews of people who use the Zymatic, which was their first one, which was really, you know, it's a $2,000 device, really tailored at the like the semi-pro or the person who's really serious about home brewing.
Yeah.
You know, they've talked about numbers. They sold that in the thousands, handfuls of thousands. A lot of those went to people who are either, you know, master brewers or own like some sort of like beer brewing business.
Right.
Because what this is essentially like your 3D printer for beer. Like you can actually make small quantities, perfect the recipe, scale it up.
Yep.
And by and large, the reviews have been very, very positive. You can even go on Amazon. There's a lot of reviews on Amazon. And like, I was just reading those the other day. Everyone loves it. So
that's genius. I mean, that is a genius application, like to look at all these craft brewers and think like, here's your test, you know, your little test lab for creating new brews. I think that's awesome. So very cool. Well, maybe you'll have to brew a batch for when I come out to Seattle for the summit.
Speaking of like Seattle based hardware companies that I'm testing out their equipment. I also tested out a Chef Steps Jewel, which they're actually going out to a wider audience pretty soon. I think we maybe mentioned on the last podcast, I'm not quite sure, that they dropped the price.
Yes. We talked a little bit about their effort. We've talked a little bit about their foray into hardware, sous vide, and then the fact that they gave money back to their backers. But you actually got to test it out.
Yeah, and so I've been giving it a trial run. By and large, I really liked the experience. I thought the risk was the fact that they didn't have any sort of on device screen. You really need to use the app to run the Jewel. But it's such a nice integration with that the app on my smartphone and the Jewel that it works very, very well. Mm. The entire focus of their app creation was this idea of like visual doneness, creating like a very visual experience where they took what they're known for, videos,
right,
and an education around cooking and apply that to a piece of hardware. And they've done, I think, a nice job on that. So I've done steak, I've done chicken with it. It's a very, very nice piece of hardware. One of the very simple things that I like about it is it actually has a magnet on the bottom of it. And so I don't clip it on the side. I just drop it in the pan and just stick straight up.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
That's a nice feature to not have to, the ease of just being able to stick it in there without having to screw it on or whatever. We had issues with our first sous vide thing where the water wasn't high enough or something. We kept having to adjust where it was in the pot. So that's very cool. Yep. Well, now we've gotten to our section of the podcast where we talk about things that are just really weird and strange and that we come across in our constant search and research in the smart kitchen food tech world. So I came across the story. I don't even really understand it, but I just was like, we have to talk about this and bring this to the people. So Pizza Hut, you know, famous pizza delivery, fast food delivery in America and in globally, came out with this invention. It's DJ Pizza Box. And so the idea is that they've partnered with this technology company in London, and the pizza box is like a DJ unit, right? And it comes with like, it looks like a cardboard box, but when you open it up, there's the decks and the mixer and the controllable buttons and the ability to like, and it's all Pizza Hut branded, obviously. and then when you open it up, it says taste freedom. And then there's like all the stuff. I don't really have a lot. I don't even know what to make of it. I have no idea if you can even deliver pizza this thing, but it's kind of an awesome marketing ploy. And it kind of puts Pizza Hut in the like, oh, they're doing some interesting, like fun little, you know, clever tech stuff. That's kind of cool.
I like it. I like the idea. I like this weird kind of almost like efforts at viral marketing stunts. This is completely unrelated. Oh, this is kind of food related, but I don't know if you saw that Kentucky Fried Chicken was actually offering. They offered suntan lotion that smelled like chicken.
Yes, I did. This was in my Slack earlier this week from my staff.
Yeah. I was so bummed because they were actually giving away like 1,000 bottles.
And they ran out.
They ran out so fast. I actually, as soon as I saw that, I went to the site thinking, because a lot of people are just grossing out. I'm thinking this is something I must have.
Oh my
and
God.
It was gone.
I can only picture what your wife's reaction would be to you putting on chicken, fried chicken sunscreen. Like I can't imagine.
It would have been one of those things I probably just had a can of and never used. Like I would have sprayed it to smell it, but like it was more the collector's item aspect of it.
But it did get a lot of, you know, coverage and it was out there. So to your point, the using interesting viral marketing techniques, but I just thought like, you know, pizza, when I first saw the story, I thought it was like, oh, Pizza Hut's doing this like cool new delivery model. And then I was like, oh, it's just a marketing tool. What are you going to do? In less maybe weird, but sort of interesting, I think this we've seen this a lot in kind of the future of food stuff. You came across an article where it was using insects as ingredients.
Now, I used to work for Reed Elsevier, which is this big trade publication company. And they publish traditionally published very kind of mundane and boring things. Well, you know, they're like, what are the cheese processing quarterly. We'd always joke. You know, they also own Variety magazine, but they sold that off a while ago. But they published a book called Insects as Sustainable Food Ingredients, Processing, Production, and Food Applications. It's interesting to me that there's more and more focus on using, I guess, insects as a form of sustainable protein. Now, I really first noticed the interest in food and particularly cricket protein on Shark Tank. Just kind of been a long time fan. And that was really, I think, really where I first saw it. But I mean, I no doubt about it. When you start talking about, you talk about crops and the sustainability of crops and just the challenge of growing populations, I think insects make a lot of sense.
Yeah, there was a story about cockroaches being used as a milk protein base, which just like fundamentally makes you so sick to your stomach.
That's just terrible.
But I've also been reading a bunch of stuff on just general attempts to replace like alternatives to dairy that are not soy or almond milk or things like that, because there's actually a shortage of almonds in the country right now. And then soy crops, to your point, like they're struggling in certain areas the way that all crops are. So it's kind of interesting to see like these alternative things. I think some are more palatable than others. Like I can never, like how would you even market cockroach milk in the store? Like I just next to the soy milk and in between the almond milk. I don't know. I mean, it's a crazy thing to think about, but at the same time, smart, I guess, for people to be exploring, you know, what is next if we run out of, you know, almonds someday. What are we?
I don't know. All I know is watching it, one of the season 5 episodes of Walking Dead last night, and they're in kind of this period of not being able to eat anything. And so one of the guys is just digging earthworms out of the ground and eating it. So,
good Lord. Hopefully this podcast will exist if we get to that point. So yeah.
Who knows?
Just be me and there's you some... podcasting and eating cockroach, drinking cockroach milk.
A cold, frothy glass of cocktail milk.
Oh, man. That is rough.
Let's talk about the summit.
Yeah. Six weeks.
Oh, man. It's coming up so fast. One of the things I'm really excited about was we were able to add – I had wanted to add pre-conference workshops just because there were topics that we weren't able to fit in the main day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Johnny Gray, you know, was talking to me. And he goes, hey, I'd really like to do something on kitchen design. I'm like, man – He was such a breath of fresh air last year. Everyone mm-hmm. loved his thing. I said, man, if I could give an hour to Johnny Gray, so that was really kind of one of the catalysts. And so we were able to reserve a spot at the Bell Harbor Convention Center for a room about 100 people. So these are limited edition or limited tickets. So not everyone who bought a ticket can get in. You have to buy a special ticket. But there's four of them. There's one with kitchen design with Johnny Gray. We have the head of kitchen category from Amazon and Williams-Sonoma coming to talk about kitchen retail strategies. Yeah. We have folks like Dato and their partners Charbroil and Baymore talking about how to build a smart kitchen product. And then the last one is just on getting your smart kitchen startup funded. We have a lot of startups coming. And so I figured talking to two or three experts on the venture funding side could be fun.
Yeah, I think it's going to be exciting to have some pre kind of summit stuff happening. Last year we had a dinner the night before with some of the, you know, top VIPs at the conference, which actually set a nice tone for the next day. And a lot of people already knew each other. And so we're broadening that this year. In addition to doing the evening reception, which is open to all attendees, we're having these workshops. So I feel like by the time we get to the meat of things on the 6th, you know, folks will be really excited and have, you know, already done some networking and been listening to some really awesome content beforehand, and we'll really set a nice stage for the full day. So definitely looking forward to these, and we're basically at almost a two-day conference now between the pre-conference workshops and then
yeah,
the full day.
Yeah. It's 2 days, but it's not quite 2 days. I think workshops are a way to do it, to have some optional content, because, you know, if someone doesn't want to do 2 full days,
right,
they can spend almost a full extra day here doing fun and interesting stuff. I think if anyone's coming to the summit, they're listening to the podcast, make sure you definitely come to the evening reception the night of Wednesday, October 5th, at the Edgewater Hotel, this historic hotel, which is just down the street from the main conference area. We'll have 15 startups showcasing their hardware gadgets, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Edgewater is a beautiful location, and it's going to be a great place to network. And I mean, we had some startups last year in the front space of the summit, for those of you who were there last year. But this is going to be, you know, kind of a brand new venue, and then also really a widening of some startups you probably never even heard of or met yet. So it's definitely worth the while to show up and come and kind of set the stage for the event. So super excited. And 6 weeks, it's going to be September next week, and the event is in the beginning of October.
Oh
so
gosh.
Really,
what
not
happened?
a lot of time left. I don't
like
know.
I think we announced this thing like in March. I'm like, oh, I have forever. This
happens to us. That happened to us last year.
I'm so leisurely for the first 3 months.
Yeah. The summer was like, oh, we've got so much time. It's the summer.
And yeah, but then August comes around. Like, everyone's still like in that August. I'm on vacation mode. I'm like, we're like, oh my gosh, heads down.
Yep.
It's insane.
Super planning. But we should, we'll try to do a few more of these podcasts before the summit. So we've got, because I suspect as we get into September, we're going to see kind of the news pick up and lots of movement in the space. It's kind of been a quiet few weeks, but I don't think that's going to last.
And we may have some companies making news at our event. A couple have told me that they want to announce some things. So it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Ashley, have a great weekend.
Bye, Mike.
Smart Kitchen Show is brought to you by Technology.fm, Next Market Insights, and the Smart Kitchen Summit. All the music for today's show is created by Paul Tyan, T-Y-A-N. Check him out on SoundCloud. You can now find the Smart Kitchen Show on iTunes, or just go to smartkitchensummit.com/show. For Season 2, we hope to bring you lots more stories and different conversations and mix up the format a little bit. So stay tuned. And if you want to come to Smart Kitchen Summit, you know where to go, smartkitchensummit.com.